Something happening here in the bottom of the sixth. Runners on first and second with one out for Molly Mushinsky. She doubled and scored in the third and then walked in the fourth. Pitch again is up and out of the zone. Been some spasms of wildness throughout the evening from Fox. One oh, catches the inner portion of the plate at the knees. And the count now, 1-1. Wassa looking for a hit to try and cut into this deficit. Swing and a miss. Count now 1-2. Again, a good fastball from this right-hander, Molly Fox. Throws with good velocity. And the 1-2. Swing and a miss. Another good fastball. When she's in the zone, she's been very tough to hit. So now two outs in the inning. Runners remain on first and second. And that will leave it up to Nora Hintz. Hintz has walked twice. No official at-bats in this game. There's another fastball. Boy, again, there have been moments where Fox has had trouble finding the zone, but then there have been times where she started pounding the zone, and now she seems to have regained that strike zone. It's nothing and one. This time a fastball rises up and out of the zone, and that evens it up at 1-1. Runners on second and first. Two outs, bottom of the sixth inning. Marshfield leading Wausau Post 10, 14-7. Here's the pitch. There's a hard, one hopper, bobbled, grabbing it, and safe at second. Hard hitter, hit ball. Ottman was able to knock it down, tried to get to the bag in front of Majewski, but unable to do so, so all hands are safe. It's a well-hit ball by Nora Hintz. Short hopped at second. Ottman could not quite control it. And then good hustle to get there first by Majewski. And the bases are now loaded for Baylen Holstrom. Here's the pitch. In there for strike one called. So Baylen Holstrom stepping into the left-handed box for the first time tonight. She had been hitting from the right-hand side earlier. Up and in. And now it's 1-1. We've seen Holstrom from time to time step into the left-handed box this season. But now base is loaded, two outs. Trying to put a little bit of pressure on Marshfield here late. But Wausau needs the big two-out hit. There's the pitch. Swing and a miss. Trying to slap at it was Baylen Holstrom. Came up empty. And it's one ball and two strikes. Runners wait on third, second, and first. Molly Fox rocks and deals. Just getting a piece of it was Baylen Holstrom to stay alive. Defensive cut at it, but able to fight it off. And it remains 1-2. Took a little chunk out of the catcher and giving the catcher Pew a few moments as the home plate umpire. Those foul tips often can catch those catchers in the areas that are not protected by either the shin pads or the chest protector or the mask. There's a little looper down the right field side. Drops in for a base hit. One run is in. Two runs will come in. Baylen Holstrom turned on that one for the left-handed box. Looped it into right field for a two-out, two-RBI single. And it's now 14-9. Boy, after the cuts that Holstrom had, I was not optimistic. But boy, then on that two-strike pitch, he turned on it and able to get it into right for the base hit. So now Addie Heil, she'll pop it up right-hand side. Right at first base, catch will be made. And that will do it for Wausau in the sixth. But Post 10 able to get a couple of runs. The two-out, two-RBI single by Holstrom. So for Wausau, two runs in the frame. It's 14-9 heading to the seventh. This is Wausau Post 10 American Legion Softball on 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.fm, mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO, and on the Civic Media app.
Transform your home with the finest craftsmanship and custom cabinetry for your kitchen, bathroom, or closet. At Featherstone Cabinetry and Design, we bring your vision to life. From concept to completion, with expert design and professional installation. Choose Featherstone Cabinetry and Design for all your home upgrade needs. Proudly serving you from our locations in Rothschild and Minocqua. Check them out at www.featherstonecabinetry.com.
WXCO 1230 AM, W255 DN Wausau, streaming at BullFallsRadio.com.
Going to be a new pitcher here for Wausau in the top of the seventh inning. Kenna Gale now in the circle for post 10 as Wausau trails Marshfield by a score of 14-9. Hopefully by the time this one is over there'll be something left of me, as the bugs have really got bad, and it's a case where I've seen a number of the fans have actually taken off. I think it's because of the bugs more than anything else. It is really become a mosquito heaven here at Sunnyvale Softball Complex, as the first pitch misses for ball one to Molly Fox. Here's Kenna Gale's pitch, swing and a miss for strike one. But yeah, the bugs have really started to get worse and worse as we go on into this evening, and they're as bad as they've been all night long right now. And the pitch drops low and inside, taken for a ball. Two balls and one strike. Right-handed hitter Fox, the pitcher for Marshfield, waits. Gale fires it. It's a chopper, third base side, foul ball. And the count evens up at 2-2. Molly Fox, Delaney Varsho, and Ari Pugh, the three hitters due up for Marshfield in the top of the seventh. Two-two pitch. Misses down low, and the count runs full, 3-2. 3 balls and 2 strikes on Molly Fox. Slapping a mosquito away before starting her windup is Kenna Gale, and the pitch is up and away, and that's ball four. I knew I made a mistake when I forgot the bug repellent as I left home today. Because I'm going to wake up tomorrow with a lot of bug bites. Pitch is missing, up and away, runner on the move, and there will not be a throw. So Fox now at second base, and I see the center fielder slapping. I mean, the bugs have just come out. Everyone's slapping at him, and it has just become miserable in terms of the bugs. Runner on second, nobody out now for Marshfield. 1 ball, no strikes, and there's a swing and a miss by Varsho, and the count evens up at 1-1. So Delaney Varshall, left-handed hitter. One pitch, drops into the dirt, and that's ball two. Two balls and one strike. Gale's pitch misses up high, and the count goes to 3-1. Varshall waits. Gale fires. There's a ground ball, backhanded, but not able to bring it in, is Kalmus at shortstop. It'll be into short left field for a base hit. So a single for Varshall. And actually, the runner on that play where they stole, the runner was called out for leaving early. So there's a runner on first and one out for Marshfield. And there's a looping liner. Grabbed. It's going to be a double play. Grabbed at short by Kalmus. The runner broke Varshall. Now fired a first in time. And that will do it for Marshfield in the seventh inning. No runs on one base hit. No errors. And nobody left on base. End of 6.5. It is Marshfield 14, Wausau 9. This is Post 10 American Legion Softball on 98.9 WXCO.
Shifts in the market don't need to disrupt your long-term financial goals. Hi, I'm Peter Gunn, an Edward Jones Financial Advisor. Let's work together on an investment strategy for long-term results. While you can't control market volatility, you can control your financial future. Start by giving me a call at 715-849-5258. Or emailing at peter.gunn@edwardjones.com. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Bottom of the seventh inning, Wausau's last chance, trailing 14-9, swinging at the first pitch, ground ball, deep into the hole at short, throw across, not in time. Swinging at the first pitch for Post 10 was Peyton Kalmus, and good play made at short, but infield single for Peyton Kalmus, her second base hit of the game, and Wausau has the leadoff hitter on base. Thanks to a good Samaritan who came on over and provided a little bit of bug repellent here to try to save a little bit of me before the game comes to an end. But no, I tell you, it is miserable in terms of the bugs here tonight. Taylor Defner now steps in. There's a swing and a pop-up out of play. And it's nothing and two. The thing is, I've been around Sunnyvale Softball Complex for probably 40 years. My dad used to play here. I'd come out here back when I was a kid. It's always been this way. I should know better. 0-2. Swing and a miss. Runner on the move. Throw to second. And safe at the stolen base is Peyton Kalmus. But that is out number one for Wausau. And Carly Clues will be coming up next. But yeah, anybody who's come out to Sunnyvale over the decades knows that the potential for bad mosquito nights are always here. Pitch to Clues is low and outside for a ball. One ball and no strikes. 14-9 is the lead for Marshfield. They have led throughout. Fox deals. Swing and a miss. She still has plenty on that fastball. Boy, again, she has a great giddy up. She just finished up her freshman year at Marshfield High School, and she really does throw the ball well. 1-1 on Clues. Good cut. Falls it straight back to the screen. And the count goes to 1-2. One ball and two strikes on Carly Clues. Carly had an RBI double her last time up. She is 1-for-2. Also has walked. Pitch bounces in there. Runner on the move from third, and safe on the play is Kalmus. So now Peyton Kalmus at third with one out, and the count evens at 2-2. Here's the pitch. Fastball just off the outside corner. Trying to frame it was the catcher, Ari Pugh. But umpire says just off the corner, and the count runs full, 3-2. 3 balls, 2 strikes, and the pitch is up and away, and that's ball four. So runners on the corners, one out, as Adriana Bodner, the pitcher, is due up next. Wausau needs a couple of more base runners to bring the potential tying run to the plate. There's a fastball, swing and a miss for strike one. Nothing and one on Adriana Bodner. She had an RBI walk back in the third inning. 0-2. Fox pitches down low. Runner on the move from first. There'll be no play. Catcher's indifference, allowing Carly Clues into second base. Count 1-1. I see players waving at the bugs, too, so it's not just me. Swing and a miss, and that's strike two. 1 ball, 2 strikes, 1 out. Right-handed hitting, Adriana Bodner. Here's the pitch. Swing and a miss. Boy, that's a good fastball riser. Tough one to lay off of. Coming up empty is Bodner for out number two. So up next will be Madison Krause. Krause is 1-for-3. She singled and scored back in the sixth. Here's the pitch. Misses away on a fastball for ball one. 1 ball and no strikes. Right-handed batter waits. Fox deals. Down low, and the count goes to 2-0. Last chance here for Wausau. Need the big rally, 14-9 Marshfield, as we play the bottom of the seventh inning. Been a long evening. We started a bit late because the Junior Legion game went long. Wausau rallied to earn a one-run win. See if the Senior Legion can rally with a big final inning two. There is a swing and a foul ball back out of play. Could cut that time by Madison Krause right on it, but fouled it straight back. 2 balls and 1 strike. Here's the pitch, and there's a looper towards left field coming in and making the grab, and that will do it. So for Wausau in the seventh, no runs on a base hit. 2 runners left on base. Well, Wausau sees their 3-game win streak come to an end as they fall tonight to Marshfield by a score of 14-9. We'll come back and wrap this one up coming up next. This is American Legion Softball on 98.9 WXCO.
Hi, Jamie Schley here, agent with American Family Insurance. Do you know what it takes to make homeownership dreams a reality? American Family Insurance employees and agency owners and their local communities too. That's why I'm proud to support American Family's work with Habitat for Humanity. Just another reason why life's better when you're under our roof.
Contact Jamie Schley, agent at Jamie Schley Agency, LLC at 715-359-2400 today.
American Family Mutual Insurance Company, SI, and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Honey.
Yes, dear?
I was watching one of those home improvement shows, and I got an idea. How would you like to remodel our bathroom?
I don't know. I haven't the slightest idea how to even start a remodeling project.
You could go down to Priceless Building Center. It's right next to Builder's Corner Cabinetry on Washington Street. They have everything you need for any home improvement project.
Visit Priceless Building Center and Builder's Corner Cabinetry for all your home improvement needs. Located at 825 Washington Street in Wausau. Priceless Building Center, the home improvement warehouse.
Thank you.
Matt Holmes again from Sunnyvale Softball Complex, where Wausau Post 10 falls to Marchville Post 54 by a score of 14-9 tonight. A big hit tonight for Wausau was the bases clearing double by Addie Heil, part of a 6-run third inning, but there was just too much Marchville, as Marchville scored 3 in the first, 5 in the second, 3 in the third. Really came out early, took an 11-0 lead before Wausau made 11-6, but Marchfield able to hold on and win it by a score of 14-9 here tonight. This is, mentioned earlier about the foul ball that ended up at the top of the backstop, and we are seeing the power of youth as we're going to get that softball back. But tomorrow, Wausau scheduled to take on Merrill, weather permitting. And if that game does get in, and hopefully it will, we'll have it for you right here on 98.9 WXCO, starting with the pregame show at 6:20 and the first pitch at 6:30. And the forecast hasn't looked great, but, hey, sometimes it's wrong. We've seen that in the past. So hopefully tomorrow night we will have Legion softball at Merrill right here on 98.9 WXCO. And I tell you one thing. I will not forget the bug repellent tomorrow. Boy, what a night. I think the true winner is the mosquitoes. They got plenty of nourishment here tonight. But in the end, it is Marchfield 14 and Wausau 9. Thanks again to our sponsors, without whose help we could not bring you American Legion softball here on 98.9 WXCO. And thanks to you for joining us. I'm Chad Holmes, and this has been Post 10 American Legion softball on 98.9 WXCO.
This has been Wausau Post 10 American Legion Softball on 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.fm. Mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app. Wausau Post 10 Softball has been brought to you by American Family Insurance, Jamie Schley Agency, Featherstone Cabinetry, Price Less Building Center, Edward Jones Investments, Peter Gunn Agent. Thanks for joining us for Wausau Post 10 American Legion Softball on Central Wisconsin's radio voice for play-by-play, 98.9 WXCO.
The most expensive bill in history, right? In terms of how much it increases the debt, that depends on your how much growth you expect out of this, how you think that the labor market is going to respond. But by pretty much any measure, including ones from conservative organizations, it's going to be, if not the most costly bill in history, then at least it's cracking the top five, right?
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that I've been looking at is the reality that this is, during the Biden administration, I was talking about the potential of transformational change. That you know, Biden was turning the ship and moving away from neoliberalism and you know, doing some things that I thought were positive. This bill completely does all of that and basically repeals most of the progress, I think, of the 20th century. And I hate saying that because it sounds hyperbolic, but when you're talking about cutting almost $1 trillion from us, our social safety net programs, I don't know how else you can look at it.
Yeah, and that's you're talking about the social safety net programs. It also cuts billions and billions of dollars of investments in what people have deemed industrial policy to build the energy future here in America, to build solar plants and battery factories here in America, and things that Republican legislators themselves were going and cutting the ribbons in their own districts, celebrating these things. Yeah, those things are being cut as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, again, the progress that was made is being completely undone right before our very eyes. Now, you talk about energy. And I remember Trump running on, you know, we're gonna change energy policy. It's going to make gas cheap. We're going to be able to buy eggs for a buck and gas is going to be 90 or eggs for 99 cents, gas for a buck. I don't even remember at this point. But life was supposed to get a lot cheaper. And does this do any of that, or is it actually what I've been reading? Energy prices are going to go up even higher because of what they've done.
Yeah, I could certainly see a world where energy prices go up, because the fact is that a lot of fossil fuels, especially if you're talking about coal, that's not being phased out because of, you know, some sort of nanny state government making people build solar plants, it's just become less cost efficient than it was in the past. And so now these newer forms of energy that are more cost efficient, wind and solar, they're getting tax increases as a result of this bill. So it's certainly possible that we're going to see energy prices go up. But I think even at the grocery store, if you take the net effects of not just this bill, but also of the administration's tariff policy, over time, consumers are going to pay the prices of tariffs.
I look at the tariff policy and look at it, and this is a tough spot for me because I'm not an anti-tariff person. I think in a toolbox full of economic tools, tariffs are a part of it. I said from the beginning, I thought he was going to use the tool in a way that is more than ill-advised, and that he would screw it up so badly that no one would ever touch the T word ever again. And a lot of the responses that I've been getting from people are, we should never, ever consider tariffs ever, 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 not even clinically. And I'm going, yeah, I don't know about that so much because there are things that we do need it for. But you're right, you know, when you're talking about the overall trade and the way that he's wielded this tool, I think it's going to be harmful, and I think it's going to hurt especially low-wage working people in this country.
Yeah, I'm in the same camp as you. I don't think that tariffs are a dirty word necessarily that should never, ever be used. You know, there are certain applications for critical industries, for steel, for certain pharmaceuticals that I think it definitely makes sense that it's in our national interest to produce these things in our country and ensure that we have the capacity to do so if there is another global emergency like there was in 2020. But there are other things like bananas that I don't think it's a national security issue that we're importing bananas from Brazil or wherever we import bananas from, right? And the fact of the matter is, set the tariff rate to 10,000%, we're never going to produce bananas at scale in the United States.
No, and you're right on that. And this is where having sane, rational people doing trade policy is kind of important instead of what we've seen out of Trump, which is just kind of however he feels today. Because maybe you see it differently, but I don't see a strategy here. I see the spaghetti theory at work here, but based on how he feels or maybe how his toast was cooked in the morning. I don't know, but I don't see a strategy.
Yeah, I'm not myself even certain what the current tariff policy is or when they're supposed to go fully into effect. I think I knew about 5 minutes before we started this call, but it might have changed since then, so I'm not sure.
And that's how it generally works, and that's the sad reality. And if our trading partners, and because we're seeing a lot of reports that they're organizing, the one thing that you can say that Donald Trump is doing is he is uniting the world. Unfortunately for us, I think it's going to be against us. But that's, I guess, if that's a positive.
Yeah, I'm not sure that that is a positive. I think we've seen that with recent reports that tourism from out of the country is plummeting right now.
Yeah,
I think I think Las Vegas is experiencing one of the biggest unemployment rates in the country right now, just from a loss of tourism.
Yeah, I think I read something before. It's like 40% Canadian tourists are down like 40% this month over last month, which, wow, not good for us. Last question. I want to go back and I want to make sure I get this right because, you know, again, we were told this was supposed to be about helping working families. This was supposed to be about making lives cheaper, groceries cheaper, energy prices cheaper, gas prices, you know, health insurance, all this stuff cheaper. Any world that you see that happening with this because of this bill?
I don't see that happening. In my opinion, what I see happening is that the middle class gets screwed by this bill. Despite the appearance of these middle class tax cuts, you know, they could have provided those tax cuts to workers, to families, and they could have even provided substantial increases to things like the child tax credit that we mentioned earlier or the earned income tax credit. And it would have, in fact, cost significantly less. And if they had pursued things like Biden's proposed billionaire income tax, higher taxes on stock buybacks, they maybe could have even paid for those things entirely.
Yep.
But instead, they chose to blow up the deficit, further blow up the deficit, and kick people off their health care.
Yeah, but you know, they got their gold star. They got what they wanted, which is kicking the poor and the disabled and the folks at the bottom of the socioeconomic ladder. They did a good job of kicking them in the teeth in looking at this bill. But Joe, I appreciate the time. As always, great talking with you. I look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Joe Hughes, senior analyst at the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Do you think this is going to be the answer? Do you think this bill is going to be everything that I'm told it's cracked up to be? The savior of the reward to work? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Right back. Stick around.
Full Falls Radio, WXCO. As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy tonight with a slight storm chance, warm and muggy, lows upper 60s to 70. Mostly cloudy for tomorrow with scattered showers and thunderstorms. Warm and muggy, high around 80. Clearing out and cooler Thursday. Right now it's 80.
Matt Nair on air.
Author of America, Let Me In, Felipe Torres Medina is here.
My funny book about immigration. You can see how the current administration and their policies are affecting the communities. But I'm a comedian. It is really sad, but how about some jokes? Because that's the only way I can, you know.
If we don't take a moment to laugh about something, we're all going to self-destruct.
100%.
Matt Nair on air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, interestingly enough, after yesterday's show, got a bunch of red hat emails accusing me of just being anti-Trump, which, because of just how bad he is, but blaming me for saying that Donald Trump didn't cause the flood. And no, I never said Donald Trump caused the flood. I never said Republicans caused the flood. They're not God. There's no flood laser, even though I know there are people who think that we can do that. What I said, very clear, is this is Republican governance. Ill-prepared, defunded, and, well, anti-government, which is weird. Why you would ever vote for someone who tells you to your face, I don't believe in your government. And here to share some thoughts on, well, what's going on with NOAA, what's going on with the flood information, what's going on with our energy policy, and all of that, I've asked Margaret Cooney to come talk with us. Margaret is the Senior Campaign Manager for Energy and Environmental Policy there at the Center for American Progress. You can check out their website, americanprogress.org. Margaret, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
So what do you make? Help me through this, because, again, I've got all these red hats going, you know, you're blaming Donald Trump for the weather. No, not the weather, the response. Because had this been Joe Biden or Barack Obama or Bill Clinton or anybody else, well, heads would be rolling.
Yeah, well, I think from the beginning, one of the issues was just basically the job cuts, the budget cuts, with the National Weather Service and NOAA. And then in the last few days, we're seeing it with the budget and staffing cuts at FEMA. I mean, the administration cut nearly 600 staff members from the National Weather Service. And this is at a time when 40% of the forecast offices are understaffed. And I want to acknowledge and applaud the incredible effort of the forecasting office and the National Weather Service personnel, who gave accurate forecasts in a timely manner to the best of their ability with the staffing and resources that were available to them.
Yeah.
And so you saw that the forecasting was good. You saw it was accurate. It was timely. But then there was this gap in coordination between the forecasting office and the emergency managers on the ground. And when you look back at it, there is a key position that was empty in that forecasting office that specifically is there for coordination purposes. And so when you see cuts like that, personnel, budget, and then you're like, whoa, hold on, what happened? Why, where did it break down? And you're like,
it's a straight line. It's a straight line. There's no wiggle room. Straight line.
Right
back to Trump and Doge and this administration's policies.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're seeing similar things in the last week with FEMA. I mean, they've been gutting since he came into office. Trump has openly said that he wants to get rid of FEMA, at least in its current iteration. They've gutted funding. They've hindered the response and staff capacity of FEMA. And it's just going to make Americans, as we've been seeing with the Texas floods, way more vulnerable in these situations. Like, who is going to be there to coordinate across agencies, federal, state, local municipalities, emergency management workers? I mean, you're looking at a response that comes not just from the National Weather Service or just from FEMA, but they're pulling from the Army Corps of Engineers, the Forest Service, anybody that they can get a hold of, and even other states, because when things like this happen, it's so important for us to come together and use every resource available to us to help people in this situation.
Yeah, and for me, you know, I look at this, and yesterday on the program, I took aim at Republican policy, and you're not in a partisan, and I'm not asking you to get in the middle of it. But, you know, look, privatization, deregulation, and the anti-government poison that they've been spewing for 40 plus years, all of this stuff is now coming to a head in this situation. And this is just one of what potentially could be multiple situations like this going down the road. And my hope is that we take this moment and go, we kind of do need a government that's functional. We kind of need people who believe that government can do things and make sure that it does do things, you know, like letting people know there's a big storm coming.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, for me at this point, I know that the storm forecasting has obviously passed us by. And at this point, we're really in the response and recovery piece of it. And just the gutting of FEMA and how many hurdles have been put in their way in order for them to actually do their jobs in a timely manner and to the best of their ability. It's been really hard. I'm actually, the start of my career, I was a municipal firefighter and first responder. And in times like this, when these emergency disasters happen, it really hits home for me that how important it is that first responders have everything that they need in order to help people out, and that they can hit the ground and that the red tape isn't in their way. There's not bureaucracy getting in their way. There's been reports by the New York Times and CNN who've talked to FEMA staff, and they've just been, they're like, we normally are in the ground, on the ground within a couple hours. This time around, it was 72 hours, and there were so many different hurdles in their way. And it just, it's really hard to watch that, and it's really hard to know that these resources are still there. They haven't totally been cut yet, but they were not allowed access to actually do their job.
So why? I mean, look, you know, this is... Again, there's a lot of things I used to think that are nonpartisan, FEMA being one of them. When disaster happens, we all come together. We all, you know, help our neighbors. We all help our communities. At least that was my thought. And look, Texas, a very red place. I would have thought Trump would have had every resource available. Everybody, all hands on deck. 72 hours to get them there. That somebody should at least lose their job. And maybe a whole bunch of people in the decision-making process should be going by the wayside.
Well, last week, Trump said that you had people there as fast as anybody's ever seen, is what he told DHS Secretary Noem. And I mean, in my opinion, it would seem to be prudent that the blame lie with the people who have been hindering the response and recovery effort, which is Trump and those in his administration. Like, putting the blame on the staff on the ground who are doing everything they can in their power, putting the blame on the staff who is like ready, boots on, want to get on the ground, and we're told that they have to wait until Secretary Noem gives her approval. That does not seem right to me.
Yeah. I used to remember, and again, this is maybe I'm showing my age a little bit, but I used to remember when presidents believed the Truman quote of the buck stops here. I don't know how we've gone to, well, the buck, that guy down there, he did it. I don't know how we got there. I don't know how we got here.
I mean, honestly, I think what you have said on your show before about the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, I don't think it's just Trump and his administration. What we saw in there was that they repealed all unobligated funds that the Biden administration had designated for improving research, forecasting, monitoring, public communication, everything we need during extreme weather disasters. It's a potential rollback of about $100 million that would have gone towards that. Problem is, we don't know the exact amount for sure until we get the CBO score, which Republicans didn't care to get prior to passing this bill. I have, you know, fun names for it that, you know, I'm
not FCC friendly. I got you, because I got it too. When it passed, I went through that rant myself. But it accomplished Republican goals. Enriched the very wealthy while kicking the very poor. It's pretty simple in my view. They got what they wanted.
Yeah, yeah.
So let me ask you this. As a first responder, because, you know, we have not in this country, I think, done a sufficient job in ensuring that we're ready for disaster. I thought we should have been funding FEMA at a much higher level. But I have people who are saying, you know what? It's clear government can't do this. You know where I'm going. We should privatize FEMA. As somebody who's been on the ground when FEMA shows up, because I haven't, do you support privatizing?
I think one of the worst things you can do with social services or support services, things designed to help all of us, is privatize them. The last thing that you want to tell someone that they need to do in an emergency or in a recovery or a rebuild is that they have to pay a little extra for it. Just the inequities that you see happen when things get privatized. I mean, do you really want to have to pay to have a more accurate weather forecast? Do you even want to have to think about that while you're seeing floodwaters rise? Do you want to have to think about, do I have the extra money as I just lost my entire house to then pay for someone to come and help me figure out what I need to do to rebuild, what grants I need to apply for, what special assistance I need? Like, there are certain things that just should not be privatized. Also, forecasting. Who is going to pay for the weather satellites? Who's going to pay for the scientists and the forecasters? What private company has that kind of resources and money to do everything that, say, the National Weather Service and NOAA and NASA do to bring us our forecasts and allow us to hopefully have enough notice that we can evacuate if needed or just shore up our defenses locally?
The billionaire's republic of Elon, of course, because I guess he just got another big contract. Starlink is already there. We could just give it to Elon. Elon could do it.
And how much would Elon charge each of us when we're in our most desperate hour? It's just the last thing I personally would want is for any of these resources to be privatized. I don't think that privatization is going to give me more trust in the organization, probably less, because I know that the business is going to be out for its bottom dollar and not whether or not myself, my family, my community is really taken care of.
But there are
certain things that just should never be privatized.
100% with you on this. But, you know, I've had a lot of people say, you know, they couldn't do any worse. Yeah, they could. There are places across this country that have privatized fire departments. To where if you're not a subscriber, they're going to come and water down the houses next to you while yours burns to the ground. Is that the environment we want to live in? Is that the kind of country we want to live in? I don't either.
And recent polling has shown that I believe it's 74% of, or no, I think it's even more. I think it's 8 in 10 Americans believe that government should have, federal government should have a major role in providing aid to communities in the aftermath of these extreme weather disasters. I mean, and this is bipartisan support. People know that in instances like this, it's bigger than all of us. It is, natural disasters, extreme weather disasters, do not respect state boundaries. They do not respect political affiliation. Climate change, which is driving all of this, it's making these disasters more intense, more frequent, way more catastrophic. And that is not political. That
right,
is
no,
just
look, I'm not a climatologist and I don't pretend to be. I don't have all the answers, but I'm kind of looking around going, the 26-foot rise in the Guadalupe River in 45 minutes, not even Noah could have gotten out of that.
No. Yeah. And what do you do at that point? We're doing the best we can with the response and in the moment, but afterwards, like, our communities need all the support all of us can give each other in order to recover and rebuild. And when in the rebuilding, also become more resilient to the next extreme weather disaster on the horizon. Because as we're seeing, they're just coming at us one after the other. There were 27 extreme weather disasters last year that had an economic cost, not just loss of life, but an economic cost of over $1 billion each. I think in total, it was like $183 billion is what we were looking at for climate disasters last year. That's incredible.
That is incredible. So last line of questioning I've got for you, because look, I don't want this to be, it's all Trump's fault. Kind of is. It's Republicans' fault for being ill-prepared and abusing government the way they have. But what lessons are we to learn from this? Look, going forward, I want to make sure this never happens again. I want to make sure that kids going to a summer camp aren't washed away. I want to make sure that people don't wake up in the middle of the night and go, oh, crap, 26 feet of water is just taking my home away. What do we learn from this? What should we be pursuing? And are there policies that you see that could help?
I mean, honestly, we have to fully fund NOAA and National Weather Service, FEMA. That is the most straightforward answer I can give you. I'm a mom. I'm a mom of three. I cannot even comprehend what the families are going through right now on the ground. My heart goes out to them. I think that I don't want any other family to ever be in this position again. And one of the things, or the main thing that I think we can do to make a difference is fully fund and support these agencies to do their job and provide the employees of these agencies, federal workers who are there because they believe in helping their fellow Americans, give them what they need to help all of us.
Yeah, I have very little faith that this administration will heed the warning and undo the damage they've done. This is why elections, in my view, have consequences. And something maybe people should remember in a bit of time. But Margaret, I appreciate you taking time, sharing your expertise. I hope you'll come back and talk to us on something a little bit, you know, better, a little bit more positive, more hopeful down the road.
Thank you so much, Rick. I really is. Thank you for having me on.
Appreciate the time. Margaret Cooney, Senior Campaign Manager for Energy and Environmental Policy there at the Center for American Progress. Want to hear your thoughts. What's the lesson that you're getting from this? Are you seeing that, you know, elections have consequences? I want to hear it. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1931. That was the day that Ralph Gray was attacked for trying to organize black farmers. Gray was born to a large African-American family in Alabama. Living in the Jim Crow South, he became a tenant farmer. He joined the Communist Party. At the time, communist labor organizers were often more open to black membership and leadership than were other white-dominated labor organizations. Along with his brother Tommy, Ralph helped to found the Croppers and Farm Workers Union in Tallapoosa County, Alabama. They set to work organizing black sharecroppers. Then, several of the local landlords stopped providing food and money to their workers. They did this in an effort to force the black workers to labor on building a new sawmill. Angry sharecroppers joined the new union in protest. The union demanded more autonomy for the tenant farmers. They also demanded a longer school day and a public school bus for their children. Alarmed by this organizing, the sheriff, Kyle Young, led a posse to break up a union meeting. They beat and terrorized the union members. The vigilantes then went to Tommy Gray's house, where they fractured his wife's skull. Ralph Gray chased them off with a shotgun. But the next night, on July 16th, the union met again. Gray and others armed themselves to protect the meeting. Gunfire was exchanged. The sheriff shot Ralph Gray while he lay on the ground, already wounded. The mob of vigilantes then burned Gray's house to the ground. They placed Gray's mutilated corpse on the courthouse steps as a warning to any others who dare to stand up for the rights of black workers.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So yesterday I wanted to get to a couple more emails that I didn't get to because I've gotten a lot on, you bash the Republicans, but the Democrats are bad. And look, I'm the first one to tell you, Democrats have not been the great savior that I want them to be and that we need them to be. But understand, I come from the position of Republicans, they're terrible. Their policies are horrible for working people. I still have some hope that Democrats will find their soul and maybe pursue the policies that they talk about, but maybe run on those. And then maybe we, the voting people, will go, yeah, we want those policies. The sad reality, and this has been, this has been 40 years in the making, where a lot of times it's called a personality. It's what we see on TV. It's what's been presented to us. It's what we hear all the time. Look, everyone who said, Democrats suck. Yeah, they do in a lot of places. And everyone who says, it's getting harder. You're right. It's harder. The working and middle classes have been squeezed tighter than ever. And, both parties do share some of the blame. In the 1980s, a family could live on one income. It was possible. Before that, it was the norm. Today, it takes 2, 3, 4 incomes just to keep up. Housing costs have skyrocketed, gone through the roof. And you go back to, when I was growing up, houses were like 2, 2.5 times your yearly salary. Now, what's the last thing? Almost 10 times what the yearly salary is. And two things have gone on here. One, salaries haven't kept up. And two, Wall Street's found their way. They found their ability to buy up rental properties and the cost of housing has just skyrocketed. So for me, yeah, there's a lot of problems here. And this is where Democrats have some room. Because I feel the frustration that everyone says, establishment Democrats, they suck. Your anger's real. It's justified. I'm with you. And look, too many Democratic leaders have cozied up to big moneyed interest, Wall Street, private equity. Yeah, they've pushed policies that don't help you or me. I look at crypto as being the next one. And we're being sold that crypto is the answer to our... No. But here's the thing. If the Democrats want to win back the party of the working class, they want to win back working class voters, there are some things that need to be done. I had a conversation with a guy the other day, working class voter like me. Him, the only thing he was focused on was the transgender issue. And I think Democrats screwed that up horribly. this idea that we're going to force people to agree with pronouns and that stuff, ridiculous. It should have been framed as I framed it all along. I'm a firm believer in life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. Everyone has the right to pursue their freedom, their happiness, their best life. You don't have the right to force me to agree with you. You do what you want to do. And as long as your rights don't infringe on mine, we're good. But this idea that we're going to be forced to do anything in this country never works. So this guy, it was all about the transgender issue. And it's not, again, it's not that he hates transgender people. It's like, it's the hate of you're telling me what I have to believe. And from a party that, from a group that preaches tolerance, to be incredibly intolerant, kind of what got Democrats into this position. Now, as I've said before, I will fight for people in that category. I think they have the right to do whatever it is that they want to do in their lives. Has nothing to do with me. As long as their rights don't infringe on mine, we're good. But Democrats had better figure out how they're going to go back to the basics. Take that position of, look, everyone's got the right to do what they want. What do you care what someone else does? What business is it of yours? What we should be talking about are voting rights. Democrats should be the party of everybody being able to vote. Protect voting rights, expand voting rights. That should be your wheelhouse. Economic interest should be their wheelhouse. Economic populism, raise the minimum wage to a living wage, protect union rights, invest in good paying jobs, especially manufacturing and the next generation of jobs. Healthcare should be an absolute. If you get sick, you should never go broke. That's simple. And we should be pursuing a tax policy where the people with the biggest shoulders carry the most water. This tax bill that Trump just rammed through is all about enriching the people who have the biggest shoulders, lightening their load even more while burdening the folks who, well, are broke already. And we should be pushing for pro-family policies, guaranteed family leave, guaranteed paid medical leave for every working person, strengthen workplace safety rules, crack down on companies who exploit immigrants and low-wage workers. Be true to your working class roots. Understand, Democrats, you got to stop being viewed as the party of Wall Street and be the party of Main Street. And that comes with policy. And don't run away every time someone says, you know, increasing the minimum wage is socialism. Making sure that people have health care is socialism. Don't be afraid of that. Ensuring that seniors aren't in poverty because you're going to expand Social Security. Don't run away from it. You should have learned the lesson of the Affordable Care Act. Head into it. Go through it. Stand for what you believe and fight for it. Even if we lose, at least you are fighting the good fight, fighting the right fight. And then I wouldn't get a bunch of emails from people, well, Democrats suck, which completely lets the Republicans off the hook. Because most of the bad policies, most of the horrible stuff that's been going on came out of right-wing think tanks, came out of Republican study groups. So Democrats, heads up, you got a chance. Trump's handing you a golden opportunity to be that party of working people. Question is, are we going to take it? Want to hear your thoughts? Send me those angry emails. Love them. My Red Hat friends, keep telling me if you're still on Team Trump. I want to hear that too. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast, or if you get your podcast, you'll find ours. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio.
WXCO 1230 AM, W255 DN Wausau.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. Some troops are leaving the L.A. area after they were deployed there by President Trump. CBS's Matt Piper.
The Trump administration is releasing thousands of California National Guard troops from a federal mission in Los Angeles that had responded to protests. It comes more than a month after President Trump deployed the troops over Governor Gavin Newsom's objections. 2,000 Guard troops will be released, the Pentagon says, which is half of the 4,000 who were brought under federal control. It's not immediately clear how long the rest will stay in the region.
U.S. consumer inflation picked up last month, impacted by tariffs. The consumer price index was up 2.7% from a year ago. CBS News business analyst Jill Schlesinger.
One notable decrease during the month, egg prices down by 7.4%. But those prices are still 27% higher from a year ago. That is primarily due to the avian flu.
President Trump questions the credit.